Ulysses, Disc 26.
The Crier.
Mary Driscoll, scullery maid.
Mary Driscoll, a slipshod servant girl, approaches. She has a bucket on the crook of her arm and a scouring brush in her hand. Second watch.
Another. Are you of the unfortunate class?
Mary Driscoll, indignantly.
I'm not a bad one. I bear a respectable character, and was 4 months in my last place. I was in a situation, £6 a year and my chances, with Fridays out, and I had to leave owing to his carryings on.
First watch.
What do you tax him with?
Mary Driscoll.
He made a certain suggestion, but I thought more of myself as poor as I am.
Bloom. In-house jacket of ripple cloth, flannel trousers, heelless slippers, unshaven, his hair rumpled. Softly.
I treated you white. I gave you mementos, smart emerald garters, far above your station. Incautiously, I took your part when you were accused of pilfering. There's a medium in all things. Play cricket.
Mary Driscoll, excitedly.
As God is looking down on me this night, if ever I laid a hand to them oilsters.
First watch.
The offence complained of? Did something happen?
Mary Driscoll.
He surprised me in the rear of the premises, Your Honour, when the missus was out shopping one morning, with a request for a safety pin. He held me, and I was discoloured in 4 places as a result, and he interfered twicked with my clothing.
Bloom.
She counter-assaulted.
Mary Driscoll, scornfully.
I had more respect for the scouring brush, so I had. I remonstrated with him, Your Lord, and he remarked, keep it quiet.
General laughter. George Fottrell, Clerk of the Crown and Peace, resonantly.
Order in court. The accused will now make a bogus statement.
Bloom, pleading not guilty and holding a full-blown water lily, begins a long, unintelligible speech. They would hear what counsel had to say in his stirring address to the grand jury. He was down and out, but though branded as a black sheep, if he might say so, he meant to reform, to retrieve the memory of the past in a purely sisterly way and return to nature as a purely domestic animal. A 7 months child, he had been carefully brought up and nurtured by an aged bedridden parent. There might have been lapses of an erring father, but he wanted to turn over a new leaf, and now, when at long last in sight of the whipping post, to lead a homely life in the evening of his days, permeated by the affectionate surroundings of the heaving bosom of the family. An acclimatised Britisher, he had seen that summer eve, from the footplate of an engine cab of the Loop Line Railway Company, while the rain refrained from falling, glimpses, as it were, through the windows of loveful households in Dublin city and urban district, of scenes truly rural, of happiness of the better land, with Dockrell's wallpaper at 1 and 9 pence a dozen, innocent British-born bairns lisping prayers to the sacred infant, youthful scholars grappling with their pensums, or model young ladies playing on the pianoforte, or anon, all with fervour, reciting the family rosary round the crackling Yule log, while in the boreens and green lanes the colleens with their swains strolled, what times the strains of the organ-toned melodeon, Britannia metal-bound, with four acting stops and 12-fold bellows, a sacrifice, greatest bargain ever. Renewed laughter. He mumbles incoherently. Reporters complain that they cannot hear. Longhand and shorthand, without looking up from their notebooks.
Loosen his boots.
Professor McHugh, from the press table, coughs and calls.
Cough it up, man. Get it out in bits.
The cross-examination proceeds, re-Bloom and the bucket. A large bucket. Bloom himself.
Bowel trouble.
In Beaver Street.
Gripe, yes. Quite bad.
A plasterer's bucket.
By walking stiff-legged.
Suffered untold misery.
Deadly agony.
About noon.
Love or burgundy?
Yes, some spinach.
Crucial moment. He did not look in the bucket.
Nobody? Rather a mess.
Not completely.
A titbit's back number.
Uproar and catcalls. Bloom in a torn frock coat, stained with whitewash, dinged silk hat sideways on his head, a strip of sticking plaster across his nose, talks inaudibly. J.J. O'Molloy, in barrister's grey wig and stuff gown, speaking with a voice of pained protest.
This is no place for indecent levity at the expense of an erring mortal disguised in liquor. We are not in a bear garden, nor at an Oxford rag, nor is this a travesty of justice. My client is an infant, a poor foreign immigrant, who started scratch as a stowaway and is now trying to turn an honest penny. The trumped-up misdemeanour was due to a momentary aberration of heredity, brought on by hallucination. Such familiarities as the alleged guilty occurrence being quite permitted in my client's native place, the land of the Pharaoh. Prima facie, I put it to you that there was no attempt at carnally knowing. Intimacy did not occur, and the offence complained of by Driscoll, that her virtue was solicited, was not repeated. I would deal in especial with atavism. There have been cases of shipwreck and somnambulism in my client's family. If the accused could speak, he could a tale unfold, one of the strangest that have ever been narrated between the covers of a book. He himself, my lord, is a physical wreck from cobbler's weak chest. His submission is that he is of Mongolian extraction and irresponsible for his actions. Not all there, in fact.
Bloom. Barefoot, pigeon-breasted, in Lascar's vest and trousers. Apologetic toes turned in. Opens his tiny mole's eyes and looks about him dazedly, passing a slow hand across his forehead. Then he hitches his belt sailor fashion and with a shrug of oriental obeisance salutes the court, pointing one thumb heavenward.
Him makey velly muchy fine night.
He begins to lilt simply.
Lily Poo, lil child, Blingy Pigfoot every night, payee 2 shilly.
He is howled down. J.J. O'Malloy, hotly to the populace.
This is a lone hand fight. By Hades, I will not have any client of mine gagged and badgered in this fashion by a pack of curs and laughing hyenas. The Mosaic Code has superseded the law of the jungle. I say it, and I say it emphatically, without wishing for one moment to defeat the ends of justice. Accused was not accessory before the act, and prosecutrix has not been tampered with. The young person was treated by defendant as if she were his very own daughter.
Bloom takes J.J. O'Malloy's hand and raises it to his lips.
I shall call rebutting evidence to prove up to the hilt that the hidden hand is again at its old game. When in doubt, persecute Bloom.
My client, an innately bashful man, would be the last man in the world to do anything ungentlemanly which injured modesty could object to, or cast a stone at a girl who took the wrong turning when some dastard responsible for her condition had worked his own sweet will on her.
He wants to go straight. I regard him as the whitest man I know.
He is down on his luck at present, owing to the mortgaging of his extensive property at Agendath-Netaim in faraway Asia Minor, slides of which will now be shown.
To Bloom, I suggest that you will do the handsome thing.
Bloom, a penny in the pound. The image of the Lake of Kenarith, with blurred cattle cropping in silver haze, is projected on the wall. Moses Dlugach, ferret-eyed albino, in blue dungarees, stands up in the gallery holding in each hand an orange citron and a pork kidney. Dlugach, hoarsely.
Bleib Treustrasse, Berlin, W13.
J.J. O'Malloy steps onto a low plinth and holds the lapel of his coat with solemnity. His face lengthens, grows pale and bearded, with sunken eyes. The blotches of phthisis and hectic cheekbones of John F. Taylor. He applies his handkerchief to his mouth and scrutinizes the galloping tide of rose-pink blood. J.J. O'Malloy, almost voicelessly.
Excuse me. I am suffering from a severe chill. Have recently come from a sick bed. A few well-chosen words.
He assumes the avine head, foxy moustache, and proboscidal eloquence of Seymour Bush.
When the angel's book comes to be opened, if aught that the pensive bosom has inaugurated of soul transfigured and of soul transfiguring deserves to live, I say, accord the prisoner at the bar the sacred benefit of the doubt.
A paper with something written on it is handed into court. Bloom, in court dress.
Can give best references, Messrs. Callan, Coleman, Mr. Wisdom Healy, J.P., my old chief, Joe Cuff, Mr. V.B. Dillon, ex-Lord Mayor of Dublin, I have moved in the charmed circle of the highest queens of Dublin society. Carelessly, I was just chatting this afternoon at the Viceregal Lodge to my old pals Sir Robert and Lady Ball, Astronomer Royal at the Levee. Sir Bob, I said. Mrs. Yelverton Barry, in low corsaged opal ball dress and elbow-length ivory gloves, wearing a sable-trimmed, brick-quilted dolman, a comb of brilliance and panache of osprey in her hair.
"Arrest him, constable! He wrote me an anonymous letter in Prentice backhand when my husband was in the North Riding of Tipperary on the Munster Circuit, signed James Lovebirch. He said that he had seen from the gods my peerless globes as I sat in a box of the Theatre Royal at a command performance of La Cigale. I deeply inflamed him, he said. He made improper overtures to me to misconduct myself at 4:30 p.m. on the following Thursday, Dunsink time. He offered to send me through the post a work of fiction by Monsieur Paul de Kock, entitled The Girl with the Three Pairs of Stays.
Mrs. Bellingham, in cap and seal coney mantle, wrapped up to the nose, steps out of her brougham and scans through tortoiseshell quizzing glasses which she takes from inside her huge opossum muff.
"Also to me. Yes, I believe it is the same objectionable person. Because he closed my carriage door outside Sir Thornley Stoker's one sleety day during the cold snap of February 93, when even the grid of the waste pipe and the ball stop in my bath system were frozen. Subsequently, he enclosed a bloom of edelweiss, culled on the heights, as he said, in my honour. I had it examined by a botanical expert and elicited the information that it was a blossom of the home-grown potato plant purloined from a forcing case of the model farm.
Mrs. Yelverton Barry.
Shame on him!
A crowd of sluts and ragamuffins surges forward. The sluts and ragamuffins, screaming.
Stop thief! Hurrah there, Bluebeard! Three cheers for Ikey Mo!
Second watch produces handcuffs.
Here are the Derbies.
Mrs. Bellingham.
He addressed me in several handwritings with fulsome compliments as Venus in furs, and alleged profound pity for my frost-bound coachman Palmer, while in the same breath he expressed himself as envious of his ear-flaps and fleecy sheepskins, and of his fortunate proximity to my person when standing behind my chair, wearing my livery and the armorial bearings of the Bellingham escutcheon garnished sable, a buck's head, a cooped oar. He lauded most extravagantly my nether extremities, my swelling calves in silk hose drawn up to the limit, and eulogized glowingly my other hidden treasures in priceless lace, which, he said, he could conjure up. he urged me, stating that he felt it his mission in life to urge me to defile the marriage bed, to commit adultery at the earliest possible opportunity.
The Honourable Mrs. Mervyn Tallboys, in Amazon costume, hard hat, jack boots, cockspurred, vermilion waistcoat, fawn musketeer gauntlets with braided drums, long train held up, and hunting crop with which she strikes her welt constantly.
Also me, because he saw me on the polo ground of the Phoenix Park at the match All-Ireland versus the rest of Ireland. My eyes, I know, shone divinely as I watched Captain Slogger Dennehy of the Inniskillings win the final chucker on his darling cob, Centaur. This plebeian Don Juan observed me from behind a hackney car and sent me in double envelopes an obscene photograph, such as are sold after dark on Paris boulevards, insulting to any lady. I have it still. It represents a partially nude senorita, frail and lovely. His wife, as he solemnly assured me, taken by him from nature, practising illicit intercourse with a muscular torero, evidently a blackguard. He urged me to do likewise, to misbehave, to sin with officers of the garrison. He implored me to soil his letter in an unspeakable manner, to chastise him as he richly deserves, to bestride and ride him, to give him a most vicious horse-whipping.
Mrs. Bellingham.
Me too.
Mrs. Yelverton Barry.
Me too.
Several highly respectable Dublin ladies hold up improper letters received from Bloom. The Honourable Mrs. Mervyn Tallboys stamps her jingling spurs in a sudden paroxysm of fury.
I will, by the God above me, I'll scourge the pigeon-livered cur as long as I can stand over him. I'll flay him alive.
Bloom, his eyes closing, quails expectantly.
Here?
He squirms.
Again?
He pants, cringing.
I love the danger.
The Honourable Mrs. Mervyn Tallboys.
Very much so. I'll make it hot for you. I'll make you dance Jack Latin for that.
Mrs. Bellingham.
Tan his breech well, the upstart. Write the stars and stripes on it.
Mrs. Yelverton Barry.
Disgraceful. There's no excuse for him. A married man.
Bloom.
All these people. I meant only the spanking idea. A warm, tingling glow without effusion. Refined birching to stimulate the circulation.
The Honourable Mrs. Mervyn Tallboys laughs derisively.
Oh, did you, my fine fellow? Well, by the living God, you'll get the surprise of your life now. Believe me, the most unmerciful hiding a man ever bargained for. You have lashed the dormant tigress in my nature into fury.
Mrs. Bellingham shakes her muff and quizzing glasses vindictively.
Make him smart, Hannah dear. Give him ginger. Thrash the mongrel within an inch of his life. The cat-o'-nine-tails geld him, vivisect him.
Bloom. Shuddering, shrinking, joins his hands with hangdog mien.
Oh, cold! Oh, shivery!
It was your ambrosial beauty. Forget. Forgive. Kismet. Let me off this once.
He offers the other cheek. Mrs. Yelverton Barry, severely.
Don't do so on any account, Mrs. Tallboys. He should be soundly trounced.
The Honourable Mrs. Mervyn Tallboys, unbuttoning her gauntlet violently.
I'll do no such thing, pig dog, and always was, ever since he was pupped. To dare address me, I'll flog him black and blue in the public streets. I'll dig my spurs in him up to the rowel. He is a well-known cuckold.
She swishes her hunting crop savagely in the air.
Take down his trousers without loss of time. Come here, sir. Quick. Ready?
Bloom, trembling, beginning to obey. The weather has been so warm. Davy Stevens, ringletted, passes with a bevy of barefoot newsboys. Davy Stevens. Messenger of the Sacred Heart and Evening Telegraph, with St. Patrick's Day supplement, containing the new addresses of all the cuckolds in Dublin. The Very Reverend Canon O'Hanlon, in cloth of gold cope, elevates and exposes a marble timepiece. Before him Father Conroy and the Reverend John Hughes, S.J., bend low. The timepiece. On portaling.
Cuckoo! Cuckoo! Cuckoo!
The brass quoits of a bed are heard to jingle. The quoits.
Jig-jag, jigga-jigga, jig-jag.
A panel of fog rolls back rapidly, revealing rapidly in the jury box the faces of Martin Cunningham, foreman, silk-hatted, Jack Power, Simon Dedalus, Tom Kernan, Ned Lambert, John Henry Menton, Miles Crawford, Lenehan, Paddy Leonard, Nosey Flynn, McCoy, and the featureless face of a nameless one. The nameless one.
Bare back riding, wait for age. Gob, he organized her.
The jurors, all their heads turned to his voice.
Really?
The nameless one snarls.
Arse over tip, 100 shillings to 5.
The jurors, all their heads lowered in assent.
Most of us thought as much.
First watch.
He is a marked man. Another girl's plait cut. Wanted, Jack the Ripper. £1,000 reward.
Second watch. Awed. Whispers.
And in black, a Mormon, anarchist.
The crier, loudly.
Whereas Leopold Bloom, of no fixed abode, is a well-known dynamitard, forger, bigamist, bawd and cuckold, and a public nuisance to the citizens of Dublin. And whereas, at this commission of assizes, the most honourable...
His Honour, Sir Frederick Faulkner, Recorder of Dublin, in judicial garb, of grey stone, rises from the bench, stone-bearded. He bears in his arms an umbrella sceptre. From his forehead arise starkly the mosaic ram's horns. The Recorder.
I will put an end to this white slave traffic and rid Dublin of this odious pest. Scandalous.
He dons the black cap.
Let him be taken, Mr. Sub-Sheriff, from the dock where he now stands, and detained in custody in Mountjoy Prison during His Majesty's pleasure, and there be hanged by the neck until he is dead, and therein fail not at your peril, or may the Lord have mercy on your soul. Remove him.
A black skullcap descends upon his head. The sub-sheriff, Long John Fanning, appears, smoking a pungent Henry Clay. Long John Fanning scowls and calls with rich, rolling utterance.
Who'll hang Judas Iscariot?
H. Rumbold, master barber, in a blood-coloured jerkin and tanner's apron, a rope coiled over his shoulder, mounts the block. A life preserver and a nail-studded bludgeon are stuck in his belt. He rubs grimly his grappling hands, knobbed with knuckle-dusters. Rumbold. To the recorder with sinister familiarity.
Hanging Harry, your majesty? The Mersey Terror. 5 guineas a juggler. Neck or nothing.
The bells of George's Church tolled slowly, loud, dark iron. The bells.
Hey-ho, hey-ho.
Bloom, desperately.
Wait, stop. Gulls, Goodheart, I saw. Innocence, girl in the monkey house, Sue. Lewd chimpanzee, breathlessly. Pelvic basin, her artless blush unmanned me.
Overcome with emotion.
I left the precincts.
He turns to a figure in the crowd, appealing.
Hines, may I speak to you? You know me. That 3 shillings you can keep, if you want a little more.
Hines, coldly. You are a perfect stranger. Second watch, points to the corner.
The bomb is here.
First watch.
Infernal machine with a time fuse.
Bloom.
No, no. Pig's feet. I was at a funeral.
First watch. Draws his truncheon.
Liar.
The beagle lifts his snout, showing the grey, scorbutic face of Paddy Dignam. He has gnawed all. He exhales a putrid, carcass-fed breath. He grows to human size and shape. His dachshund coat becomes a brown, mortuary habit. His green eye flashes bloodshot. Half of one ear, all the nose, and both thumbs are ghoul-eaten. Paddy Dignam, in a hollow voice.
It is true. It was my funeral. Dr. Finucane pronounced life extinct when I succumbed to the disease from natural causes.
He lifts his mutilated ashen face moonwards and bays lugubriously. Bloom, in triumph.
You hear?
Paddy Dignam.
Bloom, I am Paddy Dignam's spirit. List, list, oh, list.
Bloom. The voice is the voice of Esau. Second watch. Blesses himself.
How is that possible?
First watch.
It is not in the Penny Catechism.
Paddy Dignam.
By metempsychosis. Spooks.
A voice.
Oh, rocks.
Paddy Dignam, earnestly.
Once I was in the employ of Mr. J.H. Menton, solicitor, commissioner for oaths and affidavits of 27 Bachelor's Walk. Now I am defunct. The wall of the heart hypertrophied. Hard lines. The poor wife was awfully cut up. How is she bearing it? Keep her off that bottle of sherry.
He looks round him.
A lamp. I must satisfy an animal need. That buttermilk didn't agree with me.
The portly figure of John O'Connell, caretaker, stands forth holding a bunch of keys tied with crepe. Beside him stands Father Coffey, chaplain, toad-bellied, wry-necked, in a surplice and bandana nightcap, holding sleepily a staff of twisted poppies. Father Coffey yawns, then chants with a hoarse croak.
Namine Jacob's for biscuits. Amen.
John O'Connell. Foghorns stormily through his megaphone.
Dignam Patrick T. Deceased.
Paddy Dignam, with pricked up ears, winces.
Overtones.
He wriggles forward and places an ear to the ground.
My master's voice.
John O'Connell.
Burial docket letter number UP 85,000, field 17, House of Keys, plot 101.
Paddy Dignam listens with visible effort, thinking, his tail stiff-pointed, his ears cocked. Paddy Dignam.
Pray for the repose of his soul.
He worms down through a coal hole, his brown habit trailing its tether over rattling pebbles. After him toddles an obese grandfather rat, on fungus turtle paws, under a grey carapace. Dignam's voice, muffled, is heard baying underground.
Dignam's dead and gone below.
Tom Rochford, Robin red-breasted, in cap and breeches, jumps from his two-columned machine. Tom Rochford. A hand to his breastbone bows. Reuben J. A florin I find him. He fixes the manhole with a resolute stare.
My turn now on. Follow me up to Carlo.
He executes a daredevil salmon leap in the air and is engulfed in the coal hole. Two discs on the columns wobble. Eyes of naught. All recedes. Bloom plodges forward again through the sump. Kisses chirp amid the rifts of fog. A piano sounds. He stands before a lighted house, listening. The kisses, winging from their bowers, fly about him, twittering, warbling, cooing. The kisses, warbling. Leo, twittering.
Icky, licky, micky, sticky, for Leo.
Cooing.
Coo, coo, coo. Yummy, yum, wum, wum.
Warbling.
Big, come big, pirouette, Leopold.
Twittering.
Leo, Lee.
Warbling.
Oh, Leo.
They rustle, flutter upon his garments, a light, bright, giddy flecks, silvery sequins. Bloom.
A man's touch. Sad music, church music. Perhaps here.
Zoe Higgins, a young whore in a sapphire slip, closed with three bronze buckles, a slim black velvet fillet round her throat, nods, trips down the steps and accosts him. Zoe,
are you looking for someone? He's inside with his friend.
Bloom,
is this Mrs. Max?
Zoe,
no, 81, Mrs. Cohen's. You might go farther and fare worse. Mother Slipper Slapper. Familiarly. She's on the job herself tonight with the vet, her tipster, that gives her all the winners and pays for her son in Oxford. Working overtime, but her looks turned to day. Suspiciously. You're not his father, are you?
Bloom.
Not I.
Zoe.
You're both in black. Has little Mousie any tickles tonight?
His skin, alert, feels her fingertips approach. A hand glides over his left thigh. Zoe.
How's the nuts?
Bloom.
Offside. Curiously, they're on the right. Heavier, I suppose. One in a million, my tailor Messias says.
Zoe. In sudden alarm.
You've a hard shanker.
Bloom.
Not likely.
Zoe.
I feel it.
Her hand slides into his left trouser pocket and brings out a hard, black, shriveled potato. She regards it and Bloom with dumb, moist lips. Bloom.
A talisman. Heirloom.
Zoe.
For Zoe. For keeps.
For being so nice, eh?
She puts the potato greedily into a pocket, then links his arm, cuddling him with supple warmth. He smiles uneasily. Slowly, note by note, oriental music is played. He gazes in the tawny crystal of her eyes, ringed with kohl. His smile softens. Zoe.
You'll know me the next time.
Bloom, forlornly.
I never loved a dear gazelle, but it was sure to.
Gazelles are leaping, feeding on the mountains. Near are lakes. Round their shores file shadows black of cedar groves. Aroma rises, a strong hair growth of resin. It burns. The Orient, a sky of sapphire, cleft by the bronze flight of eagles. Under it lies the woman city, nude, white, still, cool, in luxury. A fountain murmurs among damask roses. Mammoth roses murmur of scarlet wine grapes. A wine of shame, lust, blood exudes, strangely murmuring. Zoe. Murmuring sing-song with the music. Her odalisk lips lusciously smeared with salve of swine fat and rosewater. Shurak ani venavach bunait Yerushalayim. Bloom, fascinated.
I thought you were of good stock by your accent.
Zoe.
And you know what thought did?
She bites his ear gently, with little gold-stopped teeth, sending on him a cloying breath of stale garlic. The roses draw apart, disclose a sepulchre of the gold of kings and their mouldering bones. Bloom draws back, mechanically caressing her right bub with a flat, awkward hand.
Are you a Dublin girl?
Zoe catches a stray hair deftly and twists it to her coil.
No bloody fear, I'm English. Have you a swagger root?
Bloom, as before.
Rarely smoke, dear. Cigar now and then. Childish device. Lewdly. The mouth can be better engaged than with a cylinder of rank weed.
Zoe.
Go on, make a stump speech out of it.
Bloom. In workman's corduroy overalls, black gamsey with red floating tie and a pash cap.
Mankind is incorrigible. Sir Walter Raleigh brought from the New World that potato and that weed, the one a killer of pestilence by absorption, and the other a poisoner of the ear, eye, heart, memory, will, understanding, all. That is to say, he brought the poison 100 years before another person, whose name I forget, brought the food. Suicide, lies, all our habits. Why, look at our public life.
Midnight chimes from distant steeples.
The chimes. Turn again, Leopold, Lord Mayor of Dublin.
Bloom. In alderman's gown and chain.
Electors of Arranquay, Inskey, Rotunda, Mountjoy, and North Dock. Better run a tram line, I say, from the cattle market to the river. That's the music of the future. That's my programme. Qui bono? But our buccaneering Vanderdeckens in their phantom ship of finance.
An elector.
3 times 3 for our future chief magistrate.
The aurora borealis of the torchlight procession leaps. The torchbearers.
Hooray!
Several well-known burgesses, city magnates, and freemen of the city shake hands with Bloom and congratulate him. Timothy Harrington, late thrice Lord Mayor of Dublin, imposing in mayoral scarlet, gold chain and white silk tie, confers with Councillor Lorcan Sherlock, locum tenens. They nod vigorously in agreement. Late Lord Mayor Harrington, in scarlet robe with mace, gold mayoral chin and large white silk scarf. That Alderman Sir Leo Bloom's speech be printed at the expense of the ratepayers. That the house in which he was born be ornamented with a commemorative tablet. And that the thoroughfare hitherto known as Cow Parlour off Cork Street be henceforth designated Boulevard Bloom. Councillor Lorcan Sherlock. Carried unanimously. Bloom. Impassionedly.
These flying Dutchmen, or lying Dutchmen, as they recline in their upholstered poop, casting dice, what reck they? Machines is their cry. Their chimera. Their panacea. Labour-saving apparatuses, supplanters, bugbears, manufactured monsters for mutual murder. Hideous hobgoblins produced by a horde of capitalistic lusts upon our prostituted labour. The poor man starves while they are grassing their royal mountain stags or shooting peasants and partridges in their purblind pomp of pelf and power. But their reign is rover forever and ever and ev.
Prolonged applause. Venetian masts, maypoles, and festal arches spring up. A streamer bearing the legends Cade Mila Foilcher and Marto Melek Israel spans the street. All the windows are thronged with sightseers, chiefly ladies. Along the route, the regiments of the Royal Dublin Fusiliers, the King's Own Scottish Borderers, the Cameron Highlanders, and the Welsh Fusiliers, standing to attention, keep back the crowd. Boys from high school are perched on the lampposts, telegraph poles, windowsills, cornices, gutters, chimney pots, railings, rain spouts, whistling and cheering. The pillar of the cloud appears. A fife and drum band is heard in the distance playing the Col Nidre. The beaters approach with imperial eagles hoisted, trailing banners and waving oriental palms. The Chris Elephantin, papal standard, rises high, surrounded by pennons of the civic flag. The van of the procession appears, headed by John Howard Parnell, city marshal, in a chessboard tabard, the Athlone Pursuivant and Ulster King of Arms. They are followed by the Right Honourable Joseph Hutchinson, Lord Mayor of Dublin, His Lordship the Lord Mayor of Cork, their worships the Mayors of Limerick, Galway, Sligo and Waterford, 28 Irish representative peers, Sirdars, Grandees and Maharajas, bearing the cloth of estate, the Dublin Metropolitan Fire Brigade, the Chapter of the Saints of Finance in their plutocratic order of precedence, the Bishop of Down and Connor, His Eminence Michael Cardinal Logue, Archbishop of Armagh, Primate of all Ireland, His Grace the Most Reverend Dr. William Alexander, Archbishop of Armagh, Primate of all Ireland, the Chief Rabbi, the Presbyterian Moderator, the heads of the Baptist, Anabaptist, Methodist and Moravian chapels, and the Honorary Secretary of the Society of Friends. After them
march the guilds and trades and train bands with flying colours. Coopers, bird fanciers, millwrights, newspaper canvassers, law scriveners, masseurs, vintners, truss makers, chimney sweeps, lard refiners, tabinet and poplin weavers, farriers, Italian warehouse men, church decorators, bootjack manufacturers, undertakers, silk mercers, lapidaries, salesmasters, cork cutters, assessors of fire losses, dyers and cleaners, export bottlers, fellmongers, ticket writers, heraldic seal engravers, horse repository hands, bullion brokers, cricket and archery outfitters, riddle makers, egg and potato factors, hosiers and glovers, plumbing contractors. After them march gentlemen of the bedchamber, black rod, deputy garter, gold stick, the master of horse, the lord great chamberlain, the earl marshal, the high constable carrying the sword of state, Saint Stephen's iron crown, the chalice and Bible. Four buglers on foot blow a sennet. Beefeaters reply, winding clarions of welcome. Under an arch of triumph, Bloom appears, bareheaded, in a crimson velvet mantle trimmed with ermine, bearing St. Edward's staff, the orb and sceptre with the dove, the curtana. He is seated on a milk-white horse with long flowing crimson tail, richly caparisoned with golden headstall. Wild excitement! The ladies from their balconies throw down rose petals. The air is perfumed with essences. The men cheer. Bloom's boys run amid the bystanders with branches of hawthorn and wren bushes. Bloom's boys.
The wren, the wren, the king of all birds, St. Stephen's day was caught in the furs.
A blacksmith murmurs,
for the honour of God, and is that Bloom? He scarcely looks 31.
A pavior and flagger.
That's the famous Bloom now, the world's greatest reformer. Hats off!
All uncover their heads. Women whisper eagerly. A millionairess, richly.
Isn't he simply wonderful?
A noblewoman, nobly.
All that man has seen.
A feminist, masculinely.
And done.
A bell hanger.
A classic face. He has the forehead of a thinker.
Bloom's weather. A sunburst appears in the northwest. The Bishop of Down and Connor.
I here present your undoubted Emperor, President, and King Chairman, the most serene and potent and very puissant ruler of this realm. God save Leopold the First.
All.
God save Leopold the First.
Bloom, in dalmatic and purple mantle, to the Bishop of Down and Connor, with dignity.
Thanks, somewhat eminent, sir.
William, Archbishop of Armagh, in purple stock and shovel hat.
Will you, to your power, cause law and mercy to be executed in all your judgments in Ireland and territories thereunto belonging.
Bloom, placing his right hand on his testicles, swears,
so may the Creator deal with me,
all this I promise to do.
Michael, Archbishop of Armagh, pours a cruse of hair oil over Bloom's head.
Gaudium magnum annuncio vobis, habemus carne fecium. Leopold, Patrick, Andrew, David, George, be thou anointed.
Bloom assumes a mantle of cloth of gold and puts on a ruby ring. He ascends and stands on the stone of destiny. The representative peers put on at the same time their 28 crowns. Joy bells ring in Christchurch, St. Patrick's, George's and Gay Malahide. Myra's bazaar fireworks go up from all sides, with symbolic phallopyrotechnic designs. The peers do homage, one by one, approaching, genuflecting. The peers.
I do become your liegeman of life and limb to earthly worship.
Bloom holds up his right hand, on which sparkles the Kohinoor diamond. His palfrey neighs. Immediate silence. Wireless, intercontinental and interplanetary transmitters are set for reception of message.
Bloom. My subjects, we hereby nominate our faithful charger, Copula Felix, hereditary Grand Vizier, and announce that we have this day repudiated our former spouse and have bestowed our royal hand upon the Princess Selene, the splendor of night.
The former morganatic spouse of Bloom is hastily removed in the Black Maria. The Princess Selene, in moon-blue robes, a silver crescent on her head, descends from a sedan chair, borne by two giants. An outburst of cheering.
John Howard Parnell raises the royal standard.
Illustrious Bloom, successor to my famous brother.
Bloom embraces John Howard Parnell.
We thank you from our heart, John, for this right royal welcome to Green Erin, the promised land of our common ancestors.
The freedom of the city is presented to him, embodied in a charter. The keys of Dublin, crossed on a crimson cushion, are given to him. He shows all that he is wearing green socks. Tom Kernan.
You deserve it, Your Honour.
Bloom.
On this day, 20 years ago, we overcame the hereditary enemy at Ladysmith. Our howitzers and camel swivel guns played on his lines with telling effect. Half a league onward, they charge. All is lost now. Do we yield? No, we drive them headlong. Lo, we charge. Deploying to the left, our light horse swept across the heights of Plevna and uttering their war cry, Bona fide Sabaoth, sabred the Saracen gunners to a man.
The Chapel of Freeman Typesetters.
Hear, hear!
John Wise Nolan.
There's the man that got away, James Stevens.
A blue-coat schoolboy.
Bravo!
An old resident.
You're a credit to your country, sir. That's what you are. an apple woman. He's a man like Ireland once.
Bloom.
My beloved subjects, a new era is about to dawn. I, Bloom, tell you verily, it is even now at hand. Yea, on the word of a Bloom, ye shall ere long enter into the golden city, which is to be the new Bloomusalem in the Nova Hibernia of the future.
32 workmen, wearing rosettes, from all the counties of Ireland, under the guidance of Derwin the Builder, construct the new Bloomusalem. It is a colossal edifice with crystal roof, built in the shape of a huge pork kidney, containing 40,000 rooms. In the course of its extension, several buildings and monuments are demolished. Government offices are temporarily transferred to railway sheds. Numerous houses are razed to the ground. The inhabitants are lodged in barrels and boxes, all marked in red with the letters LB. Several paupers fall from a ladder. A part of the walls of Dublin, crowded with loyal sightseers, collapses. The sightseers. Dying.
Morituri te salutant.
They die. A man in a brown mackintosh springs up through a trapdoor. He points an elongated finger at Bloom. The man in the mackintosh.
Don't you believe a word he says. That man is Leopold Mackintosh, the notorious fire raiser. His real name is Higgins.
Bloom.
Shoot him, dog of a Christian. So much for Mackintosh.
A cannon shot. The man in the mackintosh disappears. Bloom, with his scepter, strikes down poppies. The instantaneous deaths of many powerful enemies, graziers, members of parliament, members of standing committees, are reported. Bloom's bodyguard distribute maundy money, commemoration medals, loaves and fishes, temperance badges, expensive Henry Clay cigars, free cow bones for soup, rubber preservatives in sealed envelopes tied with gold thread, butterscotch, pineapple rock, billet doux in the form of cocked hats, ready-made suits, porringers of toad in the hole, bottles of Jay's fluid, purchase stamps, 40 days indulgences, spurious coins, dairy-fed pork sausages, theatre passes, season tickets available for all tram lines, coupons of the Royal and Privileged Hungarian Lottery, penny dinner counters, cheap reprints of the world's 12 worst books, Froggy and Fritz, politic, care of the baby, infantilic, 50 meals for 7 and 6, clinic. Was Jesus a son myth? Historic. Expel that pain. Medic. Infant's compendium of the universe. Cosmic. Let's all chortle. Hilaric. Canvases vade mecum. Journalic. Love letters of mother assistant. Erotic. Who's who in space? Asterisk. Songs that reached our heart. Melodic. Pennywise's way to wealth. Parsimonic. A general rush and scramble. Women press forward to touch the hem of Bloom's robe. The Lady Gwendolen Dubedat bursts through the throng, leaps on his horse and kisses him on both cheeks amid great acclamation. A magnesium flashlight photograph is taken. Babes and sucklings are held up. The women.
"Little father, little father."
The babes and sucklings.
"Clap, clap, hands, till Poldy comes home. Cakes in his pocket for Leo alone."
Bloom, bending down, pokes Baby Boardman gently in the stomach. Baby Boardman hiccups, curdled milk flowing from his mouth.
"Hi, sha, sha, sha."
Bloom, shaking hands with a blind stripling.
"My more than brother,"
placing his arms round the shoulders of an old couple.
"Dear old friends."
He plays pussy four corners with ragged boys and girls.
"Peep, bo peep."
He wheels twins in a perambulator.
"Tick-tack-too, would you set a shoe?"
He performs juggler's tricks, draws red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo and violet silk handkerchiefs from his mouth.
"Rugabiff, 32 feet per second."
He consoles a widow.
"Absence makes the heart grow younger."
He dances the Highland Fling with grotesque antics.
"Leg it, ye devils."
He kisses the bedsores of a palsied veteran.
"Honourable wounds."
He trips up a fat policeman.
"You pee up. You pee up."
He whispers in the ear of a blushing waitress and laughs kindly.
"Ah, naughty, naughty."
He eats a raw turnip offered him by Morris Butterley, farmer.
"Fine. Splendid."
He refuses to accept 3 shillings offered him by Joseph Hines, journalist.
"My dear fellow, not at all."
He gives his coat to a beggar.
"Please accept."
He takes part in a stomach race with elderly male and female cripples.
"Come on, boys. Wriggle it, girls."
The citizen, choked with emotion, brushes aside a tear in his emerald muffler.
"May the good God bless him."
The ram's horns sound for silence. The standard of Zion is hoisted. Bloom uncloaks impressively, revealing obesity, unrolls a paper and reads solemnly.
"Aluf, Beit, Gimel, Dalet, Haggadah, Tefillin, Kosher. Yom Kippur, Hanukkah, Rosh Hashanah, B'ni Berit, Bar Mitzvah, Matzot, Ashkenazim, Meshuggah, Talit."
An official translation is read by Jimmy Henry, assistant town clerk.
This ends Disc 26.